A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over 5 of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar Suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX Repair Suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
So, Philip, before we podcast, I realized that I didn't explain to you why I was running a little bit late. I had to go see my cat. My cat needed some attention, and I was trying to have a conversation with her. So I asked her what 2 - 2 is. She said nothing. Hello, welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Brandt, and joined this week by Philip Carter.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. How was my dad joke for the start of this episode?
It was very dad-like. Oh, it was very dad.
Thank you. I don't have any children, but I think, a dad joke is... I've got so many more. I've been making short lists. I've got I've got through at least the first 15 episodes. There's something like 48 episodes in this series of Guitar Nerds to come. So I'm hopeful I'll have a brilliant original one for each week. But dear listeners, if you have great dad joke suggestions, I'm willing to take one. Philip, have you got any dad jokes you can reel off the top of your head?
I have a few. This one will be, if anybody's been watching a certain popular television series, they'll be familiar with this one already. But I want to get it right. You know, that's the thing about a delivery with a dad joke.
I put you on the spot.
You're going to be white New Balances. You just want to be clean white New Balances, no matter how you do it. Did you hear about the scarecrow that received an award recently?
No.
Yeah, it turns out he was outstanding in his field.
That is very good. I do like it. I do like it. That's excellent. The cat joke for me this week was tied. I couldn't quite decide whether to deliver that one or I was going to say, do you know what a tick and the Eiffel Tower have in common?
No.
They're both parasites.
awful.
That one is bad. That one is bad. But there you are. There you are, dear listener. Welcome to another episode. What are we? So the fourth? The fifth? The
fifth? Five. This is
the
fifth.
The fifth episode in season four of the Guitar Nerds.
Why do I know that better than you do? That's a real question.
It's yes. I apologize. It all becomes one. But the first episode in this series that we've been rejoined by 40 Watt Podcast's Philip Carter. Thank you very much for joining us again, Philip. It's lovely to have you back.
Man, I'm glad to be here. It's always a blast to hang out and talk guitar. And I mean, we sat here and talked forever before we even hit record. I was like, oh, there was that whole episode we wasted.
Yeah, it was. I should have started it like 40 minutes ago when we started having this chat. But of course, dear listener, you know, Philip, you were so great on the Gear of the Year podcast. It was such interesting perspective on all the stuff. And you're so... you're so sure. No, you have a specific type of thing that you like, and that is important on the Gear of the Year podcast.
Yeah, that's born out of buying and selling and owning a lot of gear over the years. Mm. So late last year, I had some of my listeners and I got in a conversation about amps we've owned and tried, and like one of them brought up like, oh, well, I'm just trying to catch up with Philip, you know, on vintage Fender amps. And I was like, okay, well, I only own one right now, but if we're trying to catch up all time, you got a ways to go. And they're like, how many of you own? I was like, vintage Fender amps or just amps in general? And like, I started a spreadsheet and I got to, so amps I've ever owned without counting acoustic guitar amps, modelers, I didn't count the Helix rig or any of that kind of stuff, and I didn't count bass amps. Right. I had gotten to 45, and then a couple of weeks ago, I thought of two more that I forgot to put on the list.
There's so many! 45, yeah. That is so many. I have to admit that amplifiers, despite obviously that I work for an amplifier company, amplifiers for bass, sure, I've got loads of those. Half of the Polymath lockup is my bass amps, but those are ones that are gifted to me by Ashdown, you know, or like I'm given long-term loans. So that kind of doesn't count. Amps that I've gone out and purchased and been specific about, especially when it comes to guitar amps, very few. Like I think, you know, guitars, basses, buy and sell those a lot. Effects pedals, obviously loads. But amps seems like a hassle, I guess. Harder to post, you know, but more difficult to come across. And also, I don't know, I guess with a guitar, I'm looking for a new thing. I don't know. The way it looks, it feels it's more immediate, the thing that you get out of that. With effects pedals, whatever, they're fine. You know, you're just looking for that next thing. But with amps, I'm more happy to just be like, well, this is the sound that I'm happy with. That's now done. You know, I'm more willing to put closure on that than guitars. But how come that's not the case with you?
Well, it's always just a different flavor. For me, I'm always about the amp. To me, like, everything else is influencing the sound of the amp more than the other things do. Like, they change you're not going to manipulate the sound of the amp by changing your pickups, by changing your pedals. That right. amp is going to sound like that amp. And so you better like the sound of your amp before you do anything else, because it's always going to sound like that. And it's a weird thing. I had dinner with Rhett Scholl a few months back, and I was in Atlanta for some things, and we hung out for a little bit, and we got in this conversation that we're very much amp people. Like, guitars are fine and fun and great, and pedals are great and fun, but I just want a really good amplifier. And I've always been that way, even though I keep bouncing back to the fact that I discovered the greatest amp of all time 17 years ago when I got my first Super Reverb. Actually longer ago than that. I don't want to think about time. It's just the thing. But yeah, amps are fun. To me, they're way more fun. They're more expensive. I get it. But that's why a lot of my list is affordable amps that I bought and flipped or bought and tried, or maybe I got them in a trade deal and I moved them on, those kinds of things.
Yeah. I guess, I wonder if that's how it is. I mean, I don't know, because I guess I'm definitely a guitar person and Matt is definitely an effects person. And, you know, maybe you're an amps, but maybe you can only be one. Maybe that's how this works. It's rare to find someone that, although you do get through you do get through guitars as well.
I do. We don't want to talk about that number. That's a body count number I'm not going to bring up. but it's not at one time, obviously. It's over the course of, I've been playing guitar since I was 18, and I'm a lot older than I want to talk about right now. So that's a quarter century of buying and selling gear. So. Yeah.
What did you settle on? Interestingly enough, what is the best Fender amplifier to get?
The Super Reverb.
The Super Reverb is that best overall outside of Fender as well?
That is. So I've tell people all the time I have a Two Rock and I love my Two Rock, and it is the objectively best amp I've ever owned.
Right.
It is the best built, incredible sounding, does everything I want it to do. I can't make it sound bad. But the best amp ever made is the Fender Super Reverb, specifically the black panel AB763 circuit. That circuit that they made from 64 to 67, and then it crept into 68 and 69 a little bit in the silver panel. That is the best Fender amp. I literally named my podcast after it. The 40-watt podcast, because the Super Reverb is 40 watts.
I see. And what is the reason behind that? Or is it some sort of unobtainable, you know, you can't put your finger on it, this amp just sounds like this?
I think it's a combination of some things. I've done way, this is so nerdy, but this is the right podcast for this. So it's a combination of the 410 open back Alnico speakers. The fact that the transformer puts out 2.1 ohms, like some people will tell you that that's not a thing, that doesn't influence the sound. It absolutely influences the sound. There's no other amp I know of that's 2.1 ohms. That's it. And then there's that Fender circuit that is just, and it's 40 watts. So it's like, it's loud, but it breaks up at the right place.
Oh, really?
And I think that has to do with the transformer and that ohmage output. I can't put it all together, but nothing else sounds like it. It's why I was so disappointed in the Fender ToneMaster Super Reverb. It's like, it sounds great. It does, but it doesn't sound like a Super Reverb.
Mm, yeah. That's something I'm increasingly hearing from everyone who's really sunk their teeth into them. I think I was very excited about that series when they came out. Maybe it's because this year I'm going through something of a, I don't know, maybe it's a midlife crisis, but all I care about is, you know, actual vintage gear. Whereas I think, you know, last year I was very much like, plugins, all of this new stuff is wonderful. Whereas now I don't care about any of it. I just want
you did. You went down the dark side. It's fine. We're welcoming you back with open arms.
Thank you.
We're going to stay in the, so I listened to this other podcast that I'm going to actually tout another podcast. That's not either one of ours, but I listened to the Truth About Vintage Amps, which is a podcast put out by Fretboard Journal, Jason Verlinde over there, and he has a tech named Skip Simmons, who has done some of the most he's worked on some of the greatest amps of all time. But he calls amps like the Super Reverb a logging truck. He's like, they're so big, they're so heavy, you don't need that much. Yes, you do, and we welcome you back to the logging truck world, Joe.
Thank you.
It's great.
Well, yes, yeah, definitely. There's. I don't care what it is anymore, but there is this thing that, you know, I guess what I touched upon just then, there's this unobtainable thing that I can't put my finger on that I just can't seem to replicate in anything I've ever tried. I'm not saying it's not replicatable. I don't know if that's a word. But it's not been achieved by anything that I have heard. And I got, you know, one of the Tone Masters. The twin, and it's fine, but it's fine, and I didn't really, you know, I didn't know enough, I couldn't, and I didn't have a real twin here to sort of direct compare it, and I really like it, it's great, but even when I plug in my little Tweed Blues Junior, there's something about that that I don't know. I think it's the And this is something that I guess people who do like, because there's nothing wrong with liking those digital amps and stuff, do they?
No, but not at all.
This will be the difference. I think it's that it's like a dog off the leash on a valve amp. I can't control it. There are things that will jump out, that will be too piercing, that will do weird things. It's uncontrollable slightly as you drive it, as you turn it up, as you drive it. You don't know what it's going to do. And all of those things have been tailored, constrained, compressed in a digital lab, not necessarily in a bad way. It's almost like the, you know, things like the Tone Master are going, what would you like a Fender amp to sound like on record when you don't want all those things to jump out? Whereas the actual Vowel versions of those amps have all those nasty edges.
Well, that's, you know, a buddy of mine was talking recently about, he was thinking about moving a bunch of stuff, buying a boutique amp and capturing it on a quad cortex or a Kemper, whichever one he has both. And then like flipping and buying into other amps and just making captures and playing those. I'm like, that's fine. The capture technology is interesting and it's cool, but here's the deal. It's capturing your amp at that setting. The moment you turn the knobs, it's guessing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is very
true. I guess this is how that amp would react if I turned the volume up from 5 to 7. I'm guessing.
But as we all know with Fender amps, a volume knob means nothing.
It doesn't. Once you're past 3 on a Fender amp, that volume knob is garbage. It just doesn't exist. And that super reverbs are no different, by the way. There's a point somewhere between 1 and 2, and I can't always land on it, where it goes from like 10 decibels to 110 decibels and there's no in between. And it's, you just learn to accept it. But yeah, there is a thing. There's absolutely a thing. And you know what? Some people say, well, it's in your head. It's psychosomatic. Guess what? Everything's in our head. Yeah. Literally, the way you perceive, everything is in your head. So if it sounds better to you, guess what? It is better. Doesn't matter what A and B here are. If it sounds better to you, it is better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. I think I've come to that, you know, that conclusion that I'm not chasing. I think I used to chase things because I felt that they were perceived as being better. Like, I hear that these things are the things you need.
Yes.
Whereas now I have accepted the things that I am looking for, and they are noisy, difficult yes. to use valve amps, and they are badly intonating, you know, vintage guitars. Those are the things that I really like. So I'm happy with that. I'm resigned to that. There's still, of course, you know, Pliny playing a fan fretted Strandberg into his MacBook Pro is an infinitely better guitarist than I will ever be, and sells a lot more records than I do. And he's very, very good at what he does. And it's great that he likes that. I just don't. No, I mean, I just I like the binary opposite of that.
That's it. Then there's Neil Young. Nothing wrong with that. Exactly. No, exactly. Neil Young. Just crank an amp until it's exploding and play it. That's the way we do it.
But I'm actually, Philip, I'm playing guitar in a new band at the moment. It's just me and my partner, Emma, but it's been a project we've been working on for years. We've sort of, you know, had tracks milling around, you know, with the two of us. I'll play drums and guitar on recording, but I guess live it will just be guitar and her singing and playing a bit of bass piano sort of thing. But we got offered a show from a pretty good like little touring outfit that are playing a Brighton show. It's a co-headline. They didn't need a support, and they were like, oh, you know, Emma and Joe, you've been working on this thing and saying you wanted to get out the gates of this show. So we've got a month to sort of finalize these things, which is quite fun. So for the first time, I realized the difference is whenever we record things, or whenever we're writing things, of course, I'm more often than not running my guitar straight into my interface. And I'm using Neuro DSP's Tone King preamp, you know, for everything. Because all I want is a filthy sounding guitar with some slapback delay and a bunch of springy reverb. And it doesn't need to be much more than that. It's simple. But I was like, oh, live, I've got to create this setup now suitable for that. So I found myself being like, well, should I take a Katana because they're reliable? Should I take the Blues Junior because the Blues Junior, you've got just gorgeous spring reverb?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Which I think is where I'm leaning towards. I want the reverb off of the Blues Junior. I want, you know, I've got lots of great slapback delays. Maybe something like a Game Changer Plus pedal to fill out some ambience and things like that. Possibly a tremolo. I don't really own a tremolo, I realized. I was kind of looking through everything I had.
What?
I know. I've got loads of vibratos, loads of like multi-modulation pedals, but I realized I don't have a good tremolo. I mean, actually, there are a couple, but Jay Cross hoards them. So I've noticed whenever Guitar Nodes gets a tremolo, Jay borrows it, and you know, and that's I haven't seen him in a couple of months, and they're sort of all at his. It would feel bad for me to be like, hey Jay, can I come round? Well, I haven't seen him in 2 months, and then just take his tremolo pedals. So, so I think I want to buy a good tremolo pedal, and also with all Fender amps for me. Then that I can't get enough. I need a bit more breakup, just a touch.
Yeah.
But I need something in front. So I'm sort of, I got out the Chase Bliss Automatone preamp, which is great. But unless you want it on the fuzz sound, I find that the drive sound is a bit too preamp, like not enough breakup. Unless you really push the gain, and then you get quite a noise floor off of it. So even though perfect sounding pedal, maybe not quite what I need. So I've been looking at the Tate Effects. They're Antares, very good. KMA, obviously I'm going to look at KMA. They're Logan, right. Very good. And I was looking at, there is a Klon copy that everyone's raving about at the moment that you can buy as a kit. The Seriatone Centura.
Oh, yeah.
Know much about those?
I've played a couple of them, and I do know that Chris Buck loves them. Mm. He had one on his board for a long time. I don't know if he still does. A lot of people seem to really, really like them. They appeal to a lot of my sensibilities. Right. They're way oversized. They're completely impractical for the circuit that they are. they're kind of overrated, but still amazing. These are all check boxes for the Philip Carter seal of approval. I just need you to know. These are all how you get me on board. I really like that one. I also, Warm Audio just came out with their Centavo, which is it's a reproduction of the Klon in the original sized enclosure. So there's that. Really affordable.
Yeah. How did this pass me by? This is fantastic. It's in a proper chassis. It's £200 on the nose.
It's way too big for a practical pedalboard. I love it. There's an option for you. I tell you what, I'm gonna put together your rig right now. This is the affordable duo gig rig for you. First of all, so we need an amp that's gonna break up. We need slapback delay. We need reverb, and we need tremolo.
Yes.
Okay. This is super simple. So first of all, just go ahead and get a Tweed Deluxe, then an EP3. and a Fender 63 reverb tank. I think for this gig, this is where I go the opposite. I think the Katana's a great amp. I think it could work for this. You have the foot switch for it?
Of course,
For it. Well, then,
got it pre-programmed with those things.
you're good unless you're like me. And so we talk about this, and we talk about, you know, the gear we like to play, and oh, this is supposed to be really good, and this is supposed to be, these are the things. And it's been my take for the last 6 months or so. I've said it on my podcast. I think I even said it on the Gear of the Year. It's like, some things just don't make me excited to play guitar. And if I'm going to go play a gig, I better be excited to play that gig. And so there are just some things. The Katana is a great amp that will get you through any situation. Doesn't make me excited to play.
That, I think you've hit the nail on the head of something that I wasn't sure why it was the reason. Or maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm being snobby and this just gives me a good excuse to to feel vindicated. But validated, rather. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly kind of where I was. I was like, the Katana, I've got this, I've got it pre-programmed with all those effects I need. Yeah. It does sound good, but I'm not excited about it.
Yeah. See, if you were in the US, because I don't know what the, I don't know how widespread these are in the UK, but if you were in the US, I would actually point you to one amp and then tell you to get a pedal for the slapback delay. Right. You've described the PV Delta Blues amp to a T. Reverb, second channel that's actually really good, and tremolo on board. And it comes in either a 210 combo or a 115 combo.
Yeah. These amps are readily available in the UK. Not only that, they are proper sleeper amps over here. Like, if you know, you know. And we knew. I remember when me and Matt worked at GAC, we absolutely loved these amps. I don't know why they don't stay in my long-term memory, because you're so right. Like, and as soon as you said that, I've just, given a quick search. I found one. I think this is the 15, which is what I would go for.
That's what you want.
For £395, buy it now on eBay. I wonder if there's
I think it has an effects loop too, so you could put the slap back in the effects loop. It's a sleeper amp. It's still a sleeper amp.
They're US made.
Yeah, or at least were. I don't even know if they still make them anymore, but they were made literally an hour and a half from where I'm sitting right now. Wow. Down in Meridian, Mississippi. Yeah, I mean they're so stupidly cheap, to be the great amps that they are. 30 watts, 115. I mean, yeah. So yeah, but then again, that doesn't help you if you ever want tremolo with a different rig.
I didn't know there was tremolo on board. Is there?
Yeah, wow. Tremolo on board.
Yeah, this ticks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, it's a ridiculously underrated amplifier.
And tweed. I love everything in tweed.
Yeah. You can get it in tweed. You can get it in black if you want to be really boring, but tweed's the right call.
Yeah. I think I mentioned it on the podcast. I may have mentioned it behind the paywall on the Patreon just to be safe last week, but I guess I'm mentioning it on here now. But I definitely was quite heavy-handed in talking Ash down into doing an entire run of tweed amps last year, which... which there are now a lot of still in the warehouses. I guess I was under the impression that tweed was more popular than it is. Maybe bass players don't like tweed. I don't know what that is.
Ooh, that might be it. Because, who has some... There's another company that does their bass amps in tweed, and I feel like they didn't move either.
Aguilar did like a range in tweed, did it as a finish option. But yeah, it's just not as common.
Yeah,
in the bass.
I thought they looked great personally, but being a guitar player, I didn't have much need for a bass amp. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was thinking of the Fender Bassman TVs. See those? Yeah, they were solid state, but it was at a time. I mean, it was turn of the century, and I think solid state was still maybe not quite People weren't singing its praises as 100% as they are now. It was a problematic amplifier.
We understand it can be good.
Yeah.
That makes sense. No, that tracks. Yeah. I remember looking at those when y'all released those amps, though. I still think they look good, and I think people need to be giving them a shot. You can't go wrong with Tweed, and that is that a proper Oxblood grill cloth?
Grill cloth, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
That's the idea. I thought it was super cool, but we'll see. We'll get there. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's like the Base 6. Maybe it's going to take 10 years for you to be proven right.
That's it. That's exactly what's going to happen. Gear of the year, retrospectively, 2033. Yeah, we'll there.
Isn't it time for a gear of the decade?
Oh, is it? Well, I guess it's 10 years of Guitar Nerd. So I guess this year we could. I've been too busy, but I've been trying to think about what I could do for extra this year as it's 10 years of Guitar Nerd. But that might be the solution there, Philip. I think you might have helped me out there.
Gear of the decade. That way you get that retroactive look at some of the year that kind of went by.
Yeah, I wonder what it would be. I mean, the obvious one is the Base 6. That sort of was, you know. Obviously, was a top scorer on our Gear of the Year back in 2013 when it was released. Then 2 years later, we were saying what idiots we were for selecting it because it had disappeared off the market. Now, with Classic Vibe being what it is, I think that was the problem. And maybe it's not quite the bass that was there. The Vintage Modified was pretty rough around the edges.
Yeah.
And Classic Vibe seems to have sorted out a lot of those things. Also, it helps that it's almost common to be finding Base 6s on the market with retrofitted electrical guitar company necks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots of great mods.
I think Classic Vibe simply changed the game for Squire in general and a lot of those designs. But that's just it. I'd be more interested to see the things that y'all called Gear of the Year that ended up being complete and utter disasters. There's got to be some of them. I mean, you had a power supply win 1 year. Come on. Oh,
J Cross. Yeah. A power supply. But even, you know, we'd get caught up in things like we had like stuff that we've really liked that really hasn't sort of taken off. When we've given like boutique brands, when we've included boutique stuff, which we decided to stop doing because it's almost not fair. It's incomparable. Right. It works that door swings both ways. There are times where, you know, big brands can't compete with something a little company is offering at a price point and vice versa. So we were like, well, there's just too much stuff. We can't compete, but we'll see. We'll see how Gear of the Decade pans out. But you've actually made quite a few purchases recently, Philip.
Trades, purchases. Yeah. So I did that thing that we all do where we reach the end of a year and we try to pretend that it's not really just another day that we arbitrarily added a turnover point to. It's like we got to this turnaround in the song. We made this up, y'all. Just letting you know, New Year's is a thing in your head. But it works. It completely works. So I got to this point where I looked around, and don't get me wrong, y'all, I still have way too much stuff. That's going to probably always be the case. But I was looking at some of the stuff I had, and I was like, you know, this stuff's really good. This stuff's really, I had a couple of pieces that were incredible guitars, but I was like, I have these pieces that I've always wanted.
Right.
I've always wanted certain things and I kept not having them. And I looked around and I was like, well, I could have that thing if I didn't have these things. Like the cost of these things are those things you've always said you wanted. So I started looking around, looking for things to sell, things to trade. So I traded some guitars. I sold a bunch of pedals and some guitars, and I picked up, this is a ridiculous haul in the last month. I picked up a Gibson Memphis ES335 58 reissue.
That's a perfect guitar. That's a perfect guitar.
That guitar almost turned me into a guitar monogamist. it really did. I also tracked down a 2013 Gibson R8 58 Les Paul reissue. And it is absolutely ridiculously stunning and an incredible guitar to play. All of y'all that want to talk trash about the custom buckers that they put in those guitars, you can all chill. They're incredible. They sound great. So I had a couple of other guitars that were part of trade deals, and so I moved some things around. And right now I've got, we'll see if it lives here, I've got one of the PRS McCartney. It's an S. There's so many letters, PRS. You're almost Ibanez. It's a PRS S2 McCarty 594 thin line. So many words. So many words. Why? Why so many words? So I've got that. It's here. It's not completely changed my mind on PRS, but I'm starting to come around to the idea of at least the McCarty 594 style. Uh-huh.
What defines a McCarty 594 style?
So,
because it all looks like the same body shape to me.
Yeah. So the McCarty is what defines the McCarty. I can't actually tell you. So, but I can tell you a couple things. Here's because I, you know, get nerdy about these things. So the McCarty was a body style that was designed when Ted McCarty was still with PRS, and it was actually made in conjunction with input from David Grissom. So Yeah, it was basically their pushing towards that vintage Les Paul spec. I mean, I know that that's not what Paul or the crew over at PRS want to hear, but that's really what they were doing. They pushed a little more towards the Gibson, some of the choices of a Les Paul.
Right.
And which is great. Well, that's McCarty. I mean, Ted McCarty designed the Les Paul too. You know what I mean? He had a hand in that. So that makes sense. Well, the 594 is direct reference to a different scale length. So where PRS guitars tend to live in that 25 and a half, is that right?
Yeah.
The 594 is a 24.594 scale
Perfect.
Length.
Perfect. Much yes. better.
Much better. It's and so it's a fun guitar to play. The thin line means that it is instead of a mahogany body with a maple cap, it is just a mahogany body, more like an SG.
That's very
so cool. The body style doesn't change itself, but the construction does.
Right.
It's very light. It plays great, sounds great. I don't really have any complaints about it. We'll see if it lives here for too long or if I end up selling it to buy a DGT because I really like the PRS DGT. Do you know why? Because it's available in gold top.
It also sounds fantastic in the demos. That's obviously going to be something to do with the man playing it in the demos.
But. Yeah. No, David Grissom is a monster player. But I think they're cool guitars. So yeah, and then finally of things I've acquired, I bought an RE201. And so because I like all things tape echo. And so now I've got the RE201. I have the full tone tube tape echo. I pretty much don't need another delay ever. that's just the way it goes.
That is a lot of things to have picked up in the last little while.
Yeah,
and kind of a lot of real essentials there, like a 201. That's very much an unsellable item. Now we were talking a bit before the podcast about the massive, you know, price difference. You know, even in the last decade for a 201, like, you know, I mentioned to you before, but I've been looking at a 101 on eBay, and I contacted Matt, was like, I think I'm going to bid on this. It's around 850 quid at the moment. And he was like, oh, that's expensive. It's not expensive. 201s are going for £2,000 at the moment. And he was like, really? I paid 400 for mine 10 years ago.
Whatever, you know, yeah.
So the price is definitely, I think they cost more over here than they do in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, well, I tell you, that 101 that you're looking at is about what I'm seeing them go for over here, too. So really? once you convert to freedom units, I mean dollars. sorry, I love that joke. It's about the same price. And and the 201, now I got a great deal on this one because it needed a little servicing, and I've serviced it and it's running pretty well. I've still got to do a couple of things later. I don't have to. It works and sounds great as is, but I have all the parts to update some of the circuit, replace capacitors and stuff. But Yeah, the prices are getting outrageous. Like when I, and you know, the same thing when I bought my other Tape Echo, I should have bought one 3 years previously.
This is it. Dear listener, I cannot recommend enough, if you do not own a Space Echo, they're not coming down in price. They probably will continue to go up in price. And whilst 10 years ago, I wish I'd said this as the first thing I'd ever said on the podcast, so that, you know, we could have all bought them back then. But the prices are getting crazy. And, you know,
well, I think part of the change is, I think part of the reason that the price is rising so high now, for a while there, you were at the mercy of NOS parts.
Sure. Yeah.
You couldn't, because it is a mechanical piece of gear, like capacitors, transistor, not worried about that. The actual moving parts of it, you need to find those parts. And so if there's no NOS available, you can't fix them. So why would you have it? But now there are companies like Ecofix in Australia, SoundGas in the UK that have these parts, that are servicing these units, that it's reasonable to own these pieces of gear again, because if they break, they can be fixed.
Yeah, of course. No, you're absolutely right. I remember when, you know, going back 5, 6, 7 years, when I was looking around at Space Echoes back then, and so many listings were up for, you know, spares and repairs, because there wasn't any other option for.
Yeah, and that doesn't happen anymore. You don't see one listed, oh, you can use it for parts. No. They're going to fix it and sell it for $2,000. That's what they're going
to
do.
Exactly. It's got to the point, because I was certainly feeling like, for maybe for playing guitar in this new project, I was like, well, I know I've got everything covered. And I do think the Game Changer Plus pedal is the ultimate, like, ambience device, just because it's so controllable. You know, it's not just on or off. It's completely under your control of how much you want to put in at any given time, which is what I want. But I would really love a Tape Echo to be on there, to be gnarly and difficult. And don't, you know, dear listener, I get it. I have lots of pedals here that can emulate Tape Echo very well. But, you know, I would like one. And so the Space Echoes are getting so expensive now. I started looking around for alternatives. And, of course, the T-Rex Replicator and the Replicator Junior, they're a really good option, and an option that come with warranties and reliable spare parts, you know.
Yeah, I actually saw a but, you know, things like the Replicator Junior, that's getting harder to find.
I don't know what the difference is between the Replicator and the Junior.
I don't either, if I'm going to be really honest.
I looked at the front panel and I was like, the controls are the same. I don't understand. Maybe it's delay time. I don't know.
I do know that when that unit was released, the initial units, and I can't tell you for how long, were problematic. There were issues. Right. There was actually something in the engineering and the design that was problematic. And so a lot were failing. They fixed a few of them. They fixed it now. Supposedly the ones you can get now or the most recent versions are good. I saw one used, like, in a guitar center for like $500.
Right.
And they're not cheap either. You're still looking at some expense there.
Yeah, it's a bunch of money.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's fun. I like rad fun things, and I want to have fun when I play. So that's why I buy these things.
Yeah, they are cool. I was thinking,
I don't buy them because they're practical.
They're definitely not practical. I was thinking about a Watkins Copycat. That's my other option. Do Watkins Copycats make it much over to the States?
I'm not familiar. Forgive me while Googling on a podcast.
Ah, yes. Wonderful. A piece of British heritage gear that's not known of. It's normally the other way. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, you can't really get those over here. But now it's the boots on the other foot, young man.
Oh, is that made? Oh, it's a WEM unit?
Yeah. WEM Watkins.
That's the same, like, speaker company that makes the...
That's right.
The WEM speakers? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know this existed, Joe.
They're great. There are a few eras of them. If you can find the older ones, which came this gorgeous, like, peppermint and cream sort of collapsible, they look like the old Singer sewing machines or old typewriter boxes or something when you close them up. They're like they're really cool, and then they open up like a chest, and then you've got the Tape Echo. I can see Philip's face, dear listener, looking like it's something it needs to purchase in the future. But they're fantastic.
Joe, there's one available in Ireland for $512.
That's a lot of money, because they were a couple of hundred quid tops over here. Well, no, sorry. If you're looking at the original peppermint and cream ones, they do go for a lot of money.
This
now,
is this is like the it's the red topped knobs and no,
the black and red chassis go for less money. You can pick those up for a couple of hundred quid.
Oh yeah, no, this is definitely the cream and red.
Right.
That it's so cool.
Very
that
good.
That is so very cool.
I think, you know, if you think when everything happened, and obviously you guys were playing Fender amps and Fender and Gibson guitars, and we were playing Vox amps and Burns guitars, when you guys were using, Ronin Space Echoes are Japanese, so I guess you were using Space Echoes, and we were using WEM copycats. But I don't know what the what was the American tape echo that you were using? The
There would be the Echo Maestro Pins. EP3.
The Maestro, yes, thank you.
EP2. Well, there was an EP1 as well. Obviously, they've gone through all the numbers, but yeah. So it would be the Maestro.
Yeah.
Well, which, don't get me wrong, is still my preferred tape delay sound.
Uh-huh.
Is the Maestro, the EP sound, because it can give you those very strong repeats, very defined delay sound. It doesn't get as spacey, but which I shouldn't use that term to define the Space Echo since it's in the name, but it's a very different kind of repeat. That's what I'm learning playing them back to back.
Right.
Very different sounds.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Jimmy Page used the Echoplex. So that's all I need to know.
That's it. Yeah. that's the thing. Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely something I'm thinking about. You've almost talked me into it a little bit more by not knowing what they are. I'm like, yeah, this is a piece of history that I need to.
Yeah, I was not aware of them at all. So it's interesting because I'm looking at the tape path of it. I'm looking at with the 201, you've got all that extra spool of tape that's just kind of running around. This is a much smaller spool of tape.
Because
there's not really any extra travel for, I don't know. It's really fascinating. I find it really, really interesting. And now I need to go hunt down videos of these being used. And I'm really,
I think
curious.
They're very simple sounding traditional tape delays, but they definitely look awesome.
Yeah.
They're sort of worth a shout. I mean,
I'm into it.
It's something, you know, that stuff, I love those sort of vintage things. And I do, there's a special place in my heart for all that vintage British gear that turned up at the time, because it really wasn't as good as what was coming out of America at the time. So it was a bit rough and ready, a lot of it, which is why, of course, you know, you don't see a lot of those brands around anymore, or a lot of that stuff hasn't become legendary in the same way as so much US stuff has.
Well, a lot of it was playing catch up. It was,
of course, absolutely.
So it was like, oh, we've got to hurry up and get this thing. I mean, look at the heritage of Marshall. He was a drummer who was renting out gear, who decided, I can just start building these instead of trying to import them anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
Exactly, yeah. And it's so much of the stuff of the time was. I think actually amps is almost a slightly different thing, because I feel like, kind of, obviously Fender amps were absolutely amazing. Plenty of incredible amps that came out of America, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marshall and Vox certainly at the sort of, the start of rock and roll were very, very important brands. It's a very small island. So having these two dominating powers meant that anything that wasn't those has sort of been forgotten, which brings me back to WEM and Watkins and their Dominator, especially the old Mark I series of Dominator amps. Have you ever seen these, Philip?
No.
This is British innovation. If you, a 1950s, WEM or Watkins, they were released under both brand names. The Dominator Mark I, a 210 valve amp that was made diagonally fronted, because of course PAs weren't really a thing back there. So the idea of it being diagonally fronted was that the sound would come out at a wider angle to more of the audience.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at a couple of them now. They actually reissued them at one point, so I'm actually looking at a reissue. So,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, apparently, at least this site, if it ever comes up, is calling this a reissue. It reminds me of the Gibson stereo amplifiers.
Yeah, yeah.
If you remember those. It's funny because when you first said that, I looked up a Watkins amp, and it actually came up with the a WEM amp. And I was like, oh, well, at least I know that logo in the grill cloth because I've seen them underneath high watt heads. and that's why I know it. But yeah, no, it's fascinating. I had no idea about this company whatsoever. Well, the Watkins side of things. Obviously, I know who WEM is, but I don't know a whole lot about them. I don't even know what WEM stands for. I just know to say WEM.
yeah, me neither, actually.
I don't know what, because it's always capitalized. So obviously it's an acronym for something.
Yeah.
Oh, we're Watkins actually, Electric Music.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Ashdown, the Mark Gooday, who owns Ashdown Amplification over here in the UK, is good friends with WEM, or WEM's Remain, which I think is the fella who owns its wife. Owns all the copyright. And we're Ashdown in talks with them at the moment because we're hoping to. We've done a limited edition run of WEM grill cloth Ashdown stuff, but we're hoping to kind of make that a bit more of a bit more proper and be able to make some WEM stuff again, because it's not doing anything. The brand's not doing anything. Obviously, it doesn't really exist. And Mark Gooday's a nice fella. He's not looking to. He's not looking to just nick the name and reissue stuff. He wants to keep this brand alive and going. So, I think something is going to happen with it. So it'll be really exciting.
Oh, that'd be very cool. I love seeing those kinds of stories of those kind of lost things.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually, because in a couple of weeks' time here in the UK, it's the Birmingham Guitar Show, which I do like the Birmingham Guitar Show. It's my favorite. I like going to Birmingham, but I'm going to meet up with High Watt Amps over there because they're really back at the moment. You know, they obviously had a little bit of a bit of downtime where everything was Chinese built and wasn't really proper High Watt stuff. And it was just, you know, they had a custom shop, but it was so, it was so limited and, you know, so small, the custom shop stuff, that I think the brand had sort of lost its way a little bit. But I think it's about to become proper and strong again. So I'm excited to have a chat with them and see how
they've put a couple of things out recently. I say recently. Time is a flat circle. So in the last 4 or 5 years, didn't they put out the 20 water here not too long ago?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They did a fuzz pedal.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got a filter fuzz. Yeah.
Yeah. Filter fuzz.
Yeah. Which is huge. Huge. It's like the size of an arm. It's
check. Yeah. That's we're going down the list here. Impractical check.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm excited to see how it goes. Yeah. Anyway, moving swiftly on, I should mention, dear listener, that after we finish this episode, we'll be recording the Patreon special, where every week we do a question of the week. I found the duck jingle in the end there, dear listener. Anyway, this week we're going to answer one, maybe two questions. The first question we're going to answer is from Joe Partick, friend of the podcast, Joe Partick, who says, I can't remember who I discussed it with on the Facebook group. This is on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. So I can't find out what they told me, but what is the deal with Greco, Bernie, Orville in terms of what's the best lawsuit Gibson custom? My only strict condition is an ebony board. Or should I be a vulture and wait for someone desperate selling a custom for
that's
cheap?
That's a strict condition.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
it's a very strict condition.
It is a strict condition, but it is doable. So we're going to do that, and then if we get time, we're going to talk about David Nagella. I don't know how to pronounce your name, David. he has this. It was a while ago, actually. This was the start of January. He posted this, but I came across this post and thought it was great. He said he loves old solid state amps from the 70s to 90s. They have quite a unique sound and quality to them. He just picked up a little Ampeg SS35. What are some of your favorite cheap sleeper amps? So maybe we'll even get onto that topic.
Feel like I already mentioned one.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. We're gonna get onto that. But we might bypass the news. We'll see, because we do need to do the topic of the week this week, as is decided by our top tier Patreon backers every week. Last week, Derek Rich was selected from the spinning of the wheel. And Derek Rich got hold of us and said, here's what he wanted us to talk about is what is a better option for removing 60 cycle hum? The latest generation of noiseless single coils are, or a hardware modification like the Sur backplate noise cancelling system, or Music Man's silent circuit. Also, if you have time, what are the noiseless single coils that you think most highly of, or is trying to eliminate 60 cycle hum with single coils not worth it? An interesting proposition. How do you feel about this? Is this ever anything you come across again? I don't feel like you play a lot of single coil guitars.
So my favorite pickup is the P90.
Right.
So noise is a legitimate thing.
Yes.
I've tried a bunch of solutions. I will tell you, and I know that not everyone likes them. My sister's main guitar for the last 15, 17, it's not her only electric, but it's the only one she ever takes live, right?
Right.
She plays one of those 90s Strat Pluses with the lace sensors in them.
Yeah.
And
Matt Knight's favorite guitar.
I will tell you, I'm impressed every time I play that guitar with the lace sensors. Now, I realize that's not really like super available, like as an option. But neither here nor there. I have tried noiseless solutions. I have tried the Fishman Fluent stuff, which I think very highly of. That silence was dramatically important. All of that included. I always come back to, in order to get rid of the hum, even in the most sophisticated systems today, which are way better than they were 20 years ago, in order to get rid of that hum, you must also take other things out.
Right.
And that hum is inaudible in a live situation. You do not hear it when you're playing, and then in between songs, turn your volume down. So that's what I've learned to do, and that's what I do all the time. I work volume knob, or what I do with a Strat sometimes. I don't gig often with a Strat anymore, but when I did, and it would be noisy on that neck pickup, which is, I don't know why anyone ever goes off the neck pickup on a Strat. It's my favorite. You get a quiet point in the song. Yeah, there's some hum, especially if you've got any gain. If you've got reverse wound, reverse polarity pickups, switch really quickly to that in-between position just to cut the hum and then switch it back to play. That's what I do. I've learned to cope with the noise only because I've never found a noiseless solution that sounded... They sound good, but they don't sound like what I want.
You feel like you're prioritizing getting rid of noise over tone.
Exactly. I'm definitely prioritizing getting rid of noise over, but also, y'all, take what I say with a grain of salt. I have an RE201, notoriously one of the noisiest units you can ever play. I deal with noise in a way that most people don't. I just sometimes embrace that that's part of the experience. It's eerie to me if the song gets quiet and there's no noise. Like, no, there's got to be something. There's I was low-fi be said before that was an option.
Yeah, exactly. There's something to be said for some rock and roll hum in a quiet bit.
Yeah. But I do think if I had to give a solution, if I was going to point you in a direction, I'd look at the Fishman Fluent stuff because I do think it's some of the best direction everybody's gone. Yeah. And go backwards to the lace sensor stuff. That stuff's pretty good.
Yeah, you've taken the words out of my mouth there. I think the Fishman Fluent stuff is absolutely brilliant. For me, I think it's the closest thing I've found to... I kind of agree with you. It's not something I care about enough that I try to actively get rid of it. But if it is something that's really annoying you, Derek, then... Fishman Fluence. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. When my experience with those pickups, to be honest, is when I got that Reverend, what's that called?
Oh, the Greg Koch?
The
Gristlemaster?
The Greg Koch Gristlemaster, yeah. When I got that, and I was just like, wow, this is fantastic. It's all the best bits of a Tele, supercharged and very recording friendly, you know.
Yeah.
It was, they were just great. I couldn't... I couldn't having that little button on the Fishman Fluence telly pickups to switch between a 50s and a 60 style telly as well, which as far as I could tell was just a bit of a bass boost, but however they want to label it is fine. It sounded great.
So I had those recommended to me recently because I was looking for some tele pickups to put into another guitar that I've been sort of on the fence about selling or keeping. But I was like, I'm going to try new pickups in it first and then make that decision. But somebody told me to get the Fishman Fluence. I was like, I don't want to have to like deal with the installation of a rechargeable battery. And all. Then they sent me a picture. I was like, oh, that's like in the jack socket.
Yeah.
It's like all part. It's like it's super simple to install, too.
It's so good. It's not like, you know, it's not like the 70s when people were butchering massive 9-volt battery holes in the back of their
vintage Strats.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a different ball game now. So that would be, I think those are great options.
Yeah. Yeah.
Deal with it or get the Fishman.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very quick and short answer, Derek, but there aren't a whole bunch of things. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things. Obviously, you've mentioned them. But yeah, personally, I really like the Fishman Fluence. If you haven't given them a go, please, you know, go into a shop, try something with some Fishman Fluences in. They're so good. They're so good. Worth a bash. Or, you know, go down Philips route and I guess, you know, lean into it. I don't want to say deal with it. I mean, like, lean into it. Make it a part of your thing. It's vibey. There's mojo to it.
Yeah. And honestly, and oh my gosh, this is so like boomer yelling at clouds. There's a part of living as a musician where learning to work with that noise and know when to cut it, when it's okay for you to have a little noise. Like there's a whole part of that dance of playing live. Like there's a whole skill set of, when I get to this part in the song, I need to make this shift or I need to do this kind of thing or like this. I don't know. There's a part of that whole experience of playing live where you're doing those things. It's like when I used to show up to certain bars early so that I could find out which direction I could face with my P90s to get the least interference from the neon lights in the bar, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know that feeling. Well, we need to spin the wheel anyway to find out what next week's topic's going to be. So I'm going to spin the wheel whilst you listen to the jingle. That was the show and tell jingle, dear listener. Now for the spin the wheel jingle.
Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel. Spin the wheel.
And this week, the winner of Spin the Wheel and the person who will be choosing what we talk about on next week's podcast is Andy Hoffler. Well done, Andy. Congratulations. You're a winner. Everyone else is a loser this week. Who knows how it'll pan out next week, Andy. As you can double win, it may well be you again. But let us know, Andy. I'll be messaging you shortly after and you can tell us what to talk about on next week's podcast. We have time. It has run away with us, so we're not going to do the news. Maybe we'll talk about a little bit of the news on the Patreon version of the podcast. Probably the biggest news this year, I think, the Strymon pedal.
You know? Well, I mean, if we're going to just go ahead and mention it while we're here, I'm looking at the watch I'm not wearing, and they're maybe 5 years too late. I get it. I think it's a cool pedal. I think it's a cool idea. But I mean, like, hey, guys, Eventide's been doing this for like a long time, breaking out their algorithm into standalone pedals that are smaller format.
Yeah, there is an argument that it feels a little bit like they've run out of ideas, but it definitely sounds very cool. I tell you, my concern with it is that I want a digital interface that does something that complex. I know I'm a fan of rotary controls, but I was like, oh, it adds like this artificial orchestration with other chordal elements underneath you. I was like, how do you choose that if you're playing in a particular key? How does it know what mode you're using? I don't know, right. But I could be wrong about all of this. So
I love the idea of smaller format, simpler Strymon pedals.
Right.
I think that's a cool, I think it's something they should have been doing sooner. That's right. my only flaw in it. That's it. That's like my big hot take. Okay. Is I feel like they should have been doing it sooner. And I worry that is going to affect their sales of the unit. Mm-hmm. I mean,
we will see. We will see. Yeah. Certainly lots of very, very positive chatter on the internet about it. But, you know, every product has positive chatter when all the videos come out. So let's see how people react rather than the people being paid to make videos about the product. let's see how that works out. Before we go, dear listener, actually, like a little bit before we go, I do want to do the show and tell. I won't bother with the jingle, but I did want to do the show and tell this week. So I've been messing around with, obviously, I make a little track for each week's demo. I've got a product that doesn't come out until next week. The date got put back. It's very exciting. I'm very excited about it. It's complex and awesome and cool, very digital, but very awesome. So I can't play any of the things from that. And so I was sitting around today being like, I sort of spent a week working on that for today. So it's not that. And I figured, like, what should I play in the show and tell in that case? So I sort of put together a few things that I've got here that aren't necessarily new products, but are things that I think are great and that everyone should check out. Obviously, the Game Changer Plus pedal, I mentioned it earlier, but I really think it's a great, great unit. It's been around so long that we almost don't talk about it. But dear listener, if you do not have one and you want ambience or to fill out a guitar track, it is just an absolutely perfect, wonderful device. So I use that. I use the KMA Chief Disruptor, of which I've got like a custom graphic version with my name on the front, which is very lovely of them to make me. But it's a big muff with a clean blend that you can clean up enough that it works like a muffly drive. It's lovely. I really like it, and I think it's incredibly versatile. So I'm coupling basically those two pedals and one of the Fender American Professional Jazz Masters, just because I mentioned on the group that I thought maybe this was an all-rounder. And the comments back I got was that Jazz Masters are not versatile, you know, that they, you know, they're too specific. And that's certainly not my experience with Jazz Masters, and nor is it something I've ever thought of Jazz Masters. I think they are really versatile, and actually the sort of, certainly on the American Professional, the controls that you get for getting different tones out of both pickups is really great. It's really good. So I'm going to play a bit. There is maybe three guitars on there, one with the neck pickup with all the tone rolled off, one on the bridge pickup with it all rolled on, and one really controlling the Game Changer Plus pedal. But here it is. Have a listen. There you go. Those really super simple setup, you know, not an awful lot going on there. But that Game Changer Plus pedal, it just brings everything to life. It's not complicated. There's not a lot to it, you know. Hit it when you want to get that sound, and that's it.
I can't sound bad. I need to try one of those real bad.
You've not tried one.
I haven't tried one.
They're very good.
I know. I've heard great things about them, and I love that idea. I play in bands where that hasn't worked, and the way I look at gear is always, how am I going to use this in a band? So there's some stuff that I end up never using. So
it's definitely,
maybe I should.
Well, it's a really good point that you bring up. The only reason it's on my board was actually for the opposite of that, because I was like, wait, I'm the only instrument other than the vocal. How do I fill out stuff without sounding like a early 2000s post rock band and, you know, have a bunch of Strymon pedals on there. Like, you know, how do I fill out sound without that?
Whoa, wait a minute. Don't be hating on the Strymon pedal. I still run the now like 12-year-old Strifecta on my main board.
No, they're very good. All I mean is like the sound to fill out things with has become Shimmer, and Shimmer has gone in my mind from when Shimmer first started as a sound. I was like, wow, that's amazing that this is a sound people can have. And then everyone had it on every single thing ever. And now it's at that point where I'm like, it sounds tacky to me now. I just want something that fills out the sound, but doesn't do that.
So. I played big church gigs for a couple of years, and let me tell you, I am shimmered out. I am completely shimmered out.
The worship effect of choice of the last decade has
it
definitely
really
been
is.
Shimmer.
Yeah, there's shimmer on vocals, like there's shimmer on everything.
yeah, that is the case. Well, dear listener, that does in fact bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, ask any questions for any reason at all, if you have a company you think we should be checking out, or if you are a company or a brand or a luthier, then reach out to us. You can email us at info@guitarnerds.net or DM us on Instagram. Ask us in the open forum on our Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds group. Do join that if you're not already a member, dear listener. If you're a Patreon supporter, then of course you can always contact us on that. Philip, how can people get hold of you?
Oh, well, there are lots of ways. You can find me over at 40wattpodcast.com. That's 40, although I do also own the spelled out version. I just haven't redirected it yet. Maybe one day. You can also go over to all the social media platforms at 40wattpodcast. Again, that's 40wattpodcast. And that's, you know, there's a Facebook group, there's a Facebook page, there's an Instagram page, there's a Twitter that I sometimes look at occasionally, maybe sometimes. But there's all the things. You can find me in all the places, and got a lot of fun stuff coming up soon. Follow the YouTube channel. There's going to be some good content coming out there. Well, no, there's going to be content coming out there soon. You can tell me if it's good or not. So.
Well, there you go. Okay, well, we're going to be heading over to the Patreon to talk about this week's question of the week. You can join us there. Visit patreon.com/guitarnerds for all the info on how you can sign up and support our charming community, which you can do, dear listener, for as little as $1 a month. Thanks very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Au revoir.
Ladies and gentlemen, comes the time in the podcast for me to say thank you very much to all of our top tier, our $10 tier Patreon backers, those people who make all this very, very possible. Thank you to Scott Guitars, to Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Grisbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, Mark Kizau-Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dore, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losa, Stephen Book, Robin Smith, Kytopia, The Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and with something like 6 months with his leg in a cast, Moot Gravitt.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.